Did you know that the 4th of July is on a Thursday this year? That's going to be a full weekend of fun out on the deck, 4 days. But if your deck isn't what it used to be and you aren't using it for great family gatherings, you need to call my friends at All Weather Decks. All Weather Decks is a 24-time winner of the Angie Super Service Award. And they probably help one of your neighbors. Click on the map link at allweatherdecks.net. Call All Weather Decks today at 913-206-1974 or go to allweatherdecks.net and mention you heard it on 810. Call now and relax.
To hour two of Sports Saturday. Allie Trost, Blake Schneider's on the boards, and now we're going to play for you an interview that aired yesterday on The Zone on Sports Radio 810 with Jason Anderson and Corey Anderson with the Katz brothers, Jason and Michael Katz, the agents of Chris Jones, giving a lot of great insight into the situation, the contract negotiations, and a lot more. So we're not going to waste any time here. Here is that entire interview between Jason and the Katz brothers that aired on Sports Radio 810 yesterday.
First of all, guys, I really appreciate you taking some time out, but I will start with congrats, because this was something that we have wondered if it would get done, could get done during this offseason, and I know a lot of fans were hoping to see number 95 in a Chiefs uniform. So a good day, a big day for the Chiefs and this team running it back over the next few years.
Thanks, Jason. That means a lot, man.
So let's start with this. Were you guys confident that this would get done all along when the season was over? We knew he was an unrestricted free agent. The franchise tag was going to be a part of this. Were you guys confident that this day would come before July 15th, that he would be a Chief with a new contract?
Yeah, I'd say, this is Michael, I'd say we had a lot of optimism, and we were looking for Chris to be able to get a deal done that would secure his future with the Chiefs, with being in a market that he loves, and hoping that we could get the numbers that we were looking for. And I think that there was always in the back of our head, we knew that we would be able to get to this point with the relationship that we have with the Chiefs and what Chris brought to the Chiefs.
Was it where like the line of communication, the conversations with Brett Veach early on, did you guys have an idea and an understanding that, okay, we're going to eventually get to the number? Because some of the reports that were out there were like, you guys were so far apart. Like, it was like, this thing isn't going to get done. They're not even close. And this may just go into past July 15th. Jason, was that something that you guys looked at and said, no, these early conversations, we know there's a middle ground that we'll reach?
You never know if you're able to reach a deal, but both sides wanted to get a deal done, and all along the Chiefs were communicating to us, and we were in communications with the Chiefs. And in this time of pandemic, time was a big key, and we knew they needed time to see the landscape, and we also understood that they had past deal to get done. So we had good communication, but you never know until the last minute if you're going to get that deal done or not.
The timeline with it getting done, you mentioned the pandemic. How much did that delay the process or delay what the numbers or shift some of those numbers that what a maybe typical contract would look like for a player that's on a franchise tag that's going to sign 4, 5, 6 years, whatever it is? How much did the unknown of next year and the year after that, Michael, play into this to where it was, okay, now we've got to restructure or figure out some other things, and this is now going to push the timeline back a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, in a perfect world, if the pandemic wasn't here, this blindsided everybody. This is a black swan event. And, you know, Chris put in 4 great years with the team. His play spoke for itself. The Super Bowl comes. He's an instrumental part of that win. And it's a dream for Chris. It's a dream for being his agent to now go to the table on the franchise tag and work out a long-term deal. And then the pandemic comes. And you know, we have to respect that. The world's upside down. As you guys saw, Jason and I kept this negotiation out of the media out of respect to what was going on. That's not how we negotiate. We handle things internally, and the Chiefs did the same thing, and we just kept our faith. We stayed patient, and we allowed everything else to unfold. And thankfully, we were able to get creative with the help of Brantillis and Chris Shea and Veach. We were able to structure a deal that was able to get Chris exactly what he needed in order to ink the deal, and was able to give the Chiefs what they needed to do this deal under the environment we're in.
Jason and Michael Katz are our guests here on Sports Radio 810 WHB in the Zone, agents of Chris Jones and also Byron Pringle for the Chiefs. Jason, how important was it for Chris Jones to stay with the Chiefs? He said in the Zoom conference call earlier this week that, you know, gold jackets and Super Bowls, that's what he's after. That's what he wants. 20 sacks or 20 million, he'll take the sacks, wants to run it back, wants to be a part of this organization. How important, and how do you weigh that importance, I guess, in a negotiation to where he says, look, I want to be a Chief, so does that mean a million or two can come off the table, or I want to be a Chief to a certain level? Like, how does that go into a negotiation, and how important was it for Chris Jones to stay here in Kansas City?
That's a great question. It means a lot for the agent to know how bad a player wants to stay in that city. And for Chris, it was a huge thing. Chris really loves Kansas City. He loves the people. He loves the barbecue. He loves the culture. He loves the Chiefs, like Michael said, Clark Hunt, Andy Reid, Brett Veach, Chris Shea, Brantillis, all unbelievable guys. That it flows from the top all the way down. And the personnel, trainers, coaches, everybody in the organization is just a class act. And it meant a lot for Chris. But in the same breath, it was very important to Chris to get things that he wanted, guarantees. And then when you talk about the deal itself, and Chris is arguably the best defensive player in the league and should be paid the highest defensive player in the league. And in the deal, you have to understand what you can get and what you can't get. In a free agency market, that's something that could happen. But under this pandemic and things of that nature, maybe you take a little less, you get the guarantees you need on a shorter deal, and things come together. So we were able to talk with the Chiefs of what's important. And again, Chris being in Kansas City was a huge driving thing for him to make this deal happen.
When he said that he wanted some things, when you say that he wanted some things to make sure that were in there, some things that he felt comfortable with, along with wanting to be a Chief for a long time, Jason or Michael can weigh in on this one. Did the Chiefs value him the way that he felt he should be valued, or even you felt, you guys felt he should be valued as a player, and the level of player, therefore the asking price of a level of player of what that person has earned? Did the Chiefs value him that way that you guys felt like was the appropriate level of value that should be there for his production?
Michael, why don't you start off?
Yeah, absolutely. Of course they did. You know, this deal doesn't get done if they don't value him. You don't pay a player $20 million a year if you are not fully invested in the person that player is, and secondly, what he can do on the field. And, you know, Chris Jones is the scary thing about Chris Jones is I personally don't even think he has came close to what he's capable of doing yet. I think that he's going to have 20 sacks this year. I think he's got a chance of getting the defensive player of the year. The minute that we signed his deal, he said, guys, I need to get back on the plane. I have a yoga appointment to get to. And we're like, Chris, can we celebrate for 5 minutes? No, he needed to get right back to Miami and start training. The money's great for him. He cares about his two kids and his amazing family, and that was great to have peace of mind to be able to take care of his family. Now all he cares about is winning another Super Bowl, Defensive Player of the Year, and I think having that attitude and being the leader he is absolutely unbelievable, and the Chiefs valued that.
Jason and Michael Katz are our guests. Jason, do you guys hear talk of – that goes on, whether it's in the media or fans or local sports radio, of whether or not, okay, he's worth this, he's not worth this. You know what, you can't pay Chris Jones this much money, or you got to pay Chris Jones that much money, or you figured out. Do you guys hear that? Does he hear that sort of conversation, that discussion, the back and forth that may take place with the value in a salary cap league, when we know there are decisions to be made on players and who can remain and be a part of a team for long term? Do you guys hear that? Not that it makes a difference in terms of negotiation, but is that something that Chris Jones would hear, or you guys would hear, in terms of a general discussion of whether or not you should pay a player as much money as Chris Jones is getting?
Yeah, you see things through the media. You see different opinions through different people. The most important thing is what's seen through the team's eyes. And at times, you might not always agree on points, but at the end of the day, Chris gave us the ammunition to be able to negotiate the best deal for him. He's an all-pro player. He's a all-pro person. The Chiefs valued him over the top, and he's a great human being. Michael and I have known him from day one since he's entered the league. He's grown. He's matured. The approach he takes with life, the approach he takes with his professionalism. He's an ambassador of the Kansas City Special Olympics. And like Michael said, right after we signed the contract, Chris was ready to get back to Miami to go back to work. Everything, and you asked this before, everything that you hear from Chris's mouth is the truth. And he was a driving force behind the negotiation. We had him in the loop on every step of the way. At the end of the day, Chris was the boss. It was his decisions to make. All we did was set the table.
Interesting. Jason and Michael Katz is our guest. Jason Anderson with you here on Sports Radio 810 WHB in the Zone. Michael, there are reports out there that the asking price from you guys and Chris Jones was Aaron Donald money, to be paid as much as Aaron Donald. Were those reports accurate? Were you guys initially looking for a contract that would reflect an Aaron Donald-type money to Chris Jones?
Well, listen, I think any great agent is going to go shoot for the star. We wanted to reset the market. And I truly believe if Chris Jones wasn't a franchise tag and was an unrestricted free agent, we would be able to probably reset the market for the defensive tackle position and get Aaron Donald plus type money. In this most recent collective bargaining agreement, the one thing that the owners did not budge on was the franchise tag. And in order to keep a guy like Chris Jones and have the leverage to be able to either negotiate a long-term deal or force him to play on that number, you now have that opportunity as a team. So we had to, you know, close the bridge and the gap in between that. And we felt that on a short length, with the upfront guarantees that we were able to get, we're able to really get a deal here where Chris can continue to climb that mountain and within 3 years get an extension or play out the deal and be an unrestricted free agent right when he turns 30 years old. So it was an unbelievable win for both sides, and that's how deals get done.
Jason and Michael Katz, they are our guest right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. For either of you, I'm not sure which one to ask with this. You can both weigh in or one or the other. But there were tweets that were sent out by Chris Jones as a part of the process and the sort of the waiting game and getting to July 15th of he had talked with or mentioned Le'Veon Bell, and then Le'Veon Bell had talked about that and said, you know, maybe sitting out the season. I don't know if this is just part of the deal, it's just part of the dance, or was Chris willing and able or prepared to sit out the season if the Chiefs didn't budge or meet you guys to a spot that you felt was value to Chris Jones? Were you guys willing to sit out the year and say, we'll figure it out next year?
This is Jason. All I can say is Chris Jones is one of the most strong-minded individuals that Michael and I have ever been in front of. And when Chris speaks, it's usually the truth. So Chris gave us the ability and the power to hold firm at our positions of where we were in negotiations because, A, they were reasonable of where he of what he was requesting, and B, he was very patient and understood the process in the communications. But to answer the question really directly, Chris is a man of his word. As you've seen, everything he does, he makes sure it happens. So at the end of the day, it wouldn't have been our call. It would have been Chris's. Thank God. We'll never know for now.
Yeah,
and that's the great news.
Agreement with that, Michael.
Yeah, I would just say the great news for us as agents, so we can sleep at night, is we are not in that position. And that's credit to the negotiators over on the Chiefs side. And you know, look what they just did with Patrick Mahomes. Unbelievable deal that really, truly, the way that Brant Tillis and Chris Shea and Veach structured that, they were able to carve out some room where we could structure our deal and get it done, where we would never be in an opportunity where Chris would sit out.
This is a hypothetical, so I grant that out of the gates that it is a hypothetical. But that position that you guys would be in, Michael, as agents, and saying, you know, Jason says that the most strong-minded individual, and what he says is what he feels and what's going to happen. So in a hypothetical world, if it didn't happen the way that it did, and we're all very excited about that, and it's you know, the final minutes of figuring something out, would you guys have advised him to sit out? If he said, I want to sit out, I'm going to sit out, I'm strong-minded, I know I can do this, would you have advised him to do that? Or what would your role be in that of helping him make that what is a monumental decision in somebody's life when it's $16 million on the line, which is crazy to think about. But how would your role be in that? Would you have advised him to say, you know what, if you want to sit out, let's do it?
Yeah, I mean, every circumstance is different, and if he was to, A, you have to get to training camp, so you'd have to sit first out of training camp, and then possibly something gets done, something doesn't get done. But in any case, there then is the season, and some players sit out for a game or two. It's basically $1 million a game. And again, you lay everything out to Chris. You show the financial loss. You show the pros, the cons. There's pros in playing because he has to show everybody that he can do it again. But in any case, there's a lot of things that go into that decision-making, and us being good agents and the NFLPA, these are things that you talk to your client about. But but the landscape is always different depending on how the client behaves and also the timing of the deal.
Did the Chiefs believe that there was a chance that he would sit out?
Listen, I think anything's possible. I believe that.
Okay.
Crit, you know, you don't want to test Chris Jones on or off the field. That's simple. And the good news is, and I know you guys like hypotheticals, and these are cool questions.
I do.
But the great news is we are not in that position.
True.
But we respect the fact that Chris has worked his tail off day in and day out to be in a position where if he had sat out, people may say he's crazy to walk away from that money for a year and be a man of principle. But a lot of people that know him would respect him if he had to do this, paying that the Chiefs are now paying him. And that's the reason why the Chiefs are paying him that, because he earned it. Mm-hmm.
Jason and Michael Katz is our guest. This is not a hypothetical then. Jason, along the way, you had mentioned, look what they did with Patrick Mahomes and getting that contract done. Was that part of the conversation that, hey, from the Chiefs side to you guys, that, you know, we got to get this deal done with Patrick Mahomes, but Chris Jones is a priority. Like, we're going to get it done. We want him to be here long term. But we're trying to do two things at once. Was the communication open, that sort of the plan all along, the way that Brett Veach presented it after Patrick Mahomes and Chris Jones, both deals were done, that it was getting Mahomes' deal figured out and then figuring out Chris Jones after that? Was that known, that that was going to be the process, as the way the order went?
We knew that when the Mahomes deal started to happen. And listen, common sense tells you that that deal's got to get in place. So
just from a common sense standpoint, we knew that deal had to get done, or that deal wasn't getting done, and then they'd be dealing with us one way or the other, whether that deal got done or it didn't get done. But I know for them, with the climate pandemic, that structure was a key thing that they needed on both of these deals, and cash flow and how you see the deal is, and that's how it works.
When Chris said on Monday, which was a great story, that he said as soon as Mahomes signed the deal, he called Chris and said, hey, man, let's get this done. I left money on the table. You got to be a Chief here, so let's go and win some more Super Bowls. So Mahomes signs the deal, immediately turns his attention to Chris Jones, the man. The Kansas City Chiefs, when they get it done, Brett Veach and, you talk about, the guys that are working with the cap, when they get it done with Patrick Mahomes, do they immediately turn their attention to you and call you guys and say, all right, that's done, let's get this thing done with Chris Jones? How quickly does that transition go from the Chiefs, from Mahomes' deal, to now let's get something done with you guys and Chris Jones?
Listen, there was always some attention on us, without a doubt. They're always communicating, and they're always telling us basically what's happening. And right when that deal was done, it definitely we got to work right away as well, because they wanted to get a deal done, and we wanted to get a deal done. And when both sides really want to get a deal done, you figure out how to get the deal done. And a little patience, perseverance, and a lot of talks back and forth, Michael and I were able to, with Chris's arsenal, get it done, and the Chiefs as well.
One more quick one. Michael, the construction of the contract, we've talked about around here the creativity that the Chiefs have used to be able to try to manage the pandemic and the unknown in the future while somehow getting Patrick Mahomes and Chris Jones locked up with the $600 million, but $10 million in a signing bonus, and that's it. As you're going down the road in the construction of the contract, is it difficult to where you're going, okay, we're going to get our client signed 4 years and $80 million, but there's not going to be a check written right now in a signing bonus that is so standard in the NFL? How much of a part of the conversation was from the Chiefs that, look, the signing bonus, we need to save some money, at least cash, for next year if we have to, renegotiate some things? And how easy of a sell, or was it your guys' idea to come up with this construction of a contract that had no signing bonus, which was a shock to almost everybody when we saw the details?
Yeah, well, listen, it was very shocking to a lot of people that deals were getting done in this pandemic. And obviously, if there was no pandemic, we're never doing a deal without a signing bonus. Thankfully, Chris is very frugal. He's got a great financial team behind him, and he's able to save all of his money that he earned for his rookie year. So a signing bonus was not detrimental to the situation. The guarantees at signing is what we needed and what we got. Chris will have $37 million in cash by April 5th. It's great that it's spread out. He'll, so all of his money's guaranteed this year. And I think that a signing bonus was nothing for us that was going to hold the deal from not getting done.
And we Jason and Michael to, Katz. Sorry about that. Go ahead.
No. This is Jason. And the Chiefs, something was important to Chris. Pat got 10. So the Chiefs, they advanced $1.5 million to Chris that was payable within 5 days. So the few key items that he may want or may not want, he's got some cash in hand in the deal as well. So that was important to Chris, and that did happen.
Who amongst us has not had our boss advance us $1.5 million? I mean, right? I mean, just a regular Tuesday, guys. Jason and Michael Katz is our guest. Last one for you guys. How much you guys sell a watch for, $5 or $1 million?
You're talking about that great tweet that Chris put out, right?
I am. Yes, I am. I'm talking about that. If it's $5, $1 million, it's clear that the Chiefs feel like Chris Jones's watch is worth $1 million.
I believe that, and I think I don't want to tell Chris that because he'll take all the credit. But maybe that tweet just got the deal done. You never know.
Really, you never know. Look, guys, I hate dealing in hypotheticals. I like dealing in reality. So I'm not saying that that's a hypothetical. Just maybe. maybe that deal got done. Is Chris the watch, and you guys would be then the father, and then the Chiefs would be the museum that would buy it? Like, where are you guys in this story?
We're just along for the ride and just happy to be a part of it, selling it and enjoying it.
Well,
and you know what?
Well,
maybe it's, you know, $80 million and $5 million in incentives. So everybody's happy. The Chiefs are happy. Chris is happy, and we're rocking and rolling.
We're ensuring the movement on that watch is precise and the best on the market. And that
there you go.
To your hypothetical, there's your answer.
So there is Jason Anderson and the Katz brothers talking about the Chris Jones contract situation. So much great stuff there, and a great get too for the Zone. Awesome interview. It's always really nice to hear the agent side in all of this. We hear the team side and the player side so often, or what they're willing to tell us. So always interesting to hear the perspective of the agent. Blake, what stood out to you most in that last 25-ish minutes there?
I thought one of the coolest things that, you know, they speculated on was that Chris Jones is really in his prime. You know, defensive linemen, it can be, I mean, they fight in the trenches. They are in the muck. They are running it up down on the line and the defensive line. So it can be a very taxing position to play. So when they said Chris Jones was in his prime and still ready to, I mean, even seeing that he can progress even farther to get, who knows, 20 sacks in a season as a defensive tackle. I mean, that is a rarity. Those are Aaron Donald type numbers. I mean, he is a specimen. Chris Jones is a specimen. So I really thought that, just to think that there's so much more Chris can do. And the first thing that he did after signing the contract was hop right back on the plane so he can go to his yoga class. It just shows that he's dedicated to this team. The relationship that he has with Patrick Mahomes and the organization and the actual team is fantastic, and they're ready to get to business. We've got all our money problems that we were all speculating all offseason on tied up and, you know, signed, sealed, delivered. So I'm excited. This is going to be a great upcoming season.
We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back here on Sports Saturday, some Royals post-game press conference sound, manager Mike Matheny, and maybe some players if we have the time, coming up next on Sports Saturday on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Hello and welcome back into Sports Saturday on Sports Radio 810 WHB. I'm Allie Trost. A big shout out to Jason Anderson and the Katz brothers there in that last segment, talking all things Chris Jones. Incredible insight on that contract negotiation. If you missed it, you can go catch up on the podcast page at 810WHB.com. But now we move over to some Kansas City Royals. The team fell, unfortunately, last night 2-0 to the Cleveland Indians. And to hear more about the game, the team's performance, we will hear from manager Mike Matheny as well as Danny Duffy and Whit Merrifield. Here are those three press conferences right here.
Mike, it's just one of those nights too where you just kind of tip your cap to Shane Bieber.
Well, you know, when you get that many swings and misses, you know you got something working. Curveball was way better than I knew he had even watching the film. That was really sharp. You know, he had multiple pitches working in there, throwing a cutter in there, didn't even really use his changeup too much. When he did, he was effective, making really good pitches. I haven't really seen the video. We had some guys kind of barking a little bit, but he was either making really good pitches or just off. But when he needed to make his fastball pitch, he made it and kept everybody off balance with his off speed. I mean, the whole day, you couldn't even think along with him. He kind of threw whatever he wanted. But you know what? Duffy was great, too. That was he had good spin going today and never even really got too much to his changeup. Left one up, it got hit a little hard, and then was able to just really deal with the fastball, making great pitches third base side and using the spin and in the zone, out of the zone. Salvi put on a display, blocking the ball and keeping guys from advancing. It was really nice job by Duff.
In that Cleveland fifth, you basically got the ground balls you wanted. Just they found holes.
Yeah, right. you know, that's that big break spot, you know, we're looking for is how can we try and get him out? Got into trouble. You know, we're in a bind right there with first and third. And you know, what do we do? What can we do to give ourselves the best chance to get the ground ball? It's a tough guy to double up to. Mercado runs really well, but unfortunately, he found a hole.
Thanks, Skip.
All right, Flanny.
Mike, what did you like about the matchup, Mercado and Barlow there?
Well, I mean, we're looking at most likely not having Danny. Once he gets a couple guys on, we're getting to the top of that order. There's a good chance he's not going to see the third time through with the top. We got a right-hander, one of our better right-handers, hot, and a right-handed hitting nine-hole hitter that we feel we will be tough to roll him up, but we still like our chances there with Barlow getting us the ground ball that we did get, but unfortunately it didn't work. But thought was we knew we were going to go in that direction once we got it, kind of the heat turned on. Actually had Barlow going as soon as hit the leadoff man. Just trying to do exactly what we said. We're gonna chase every win with everything we got and try to take our best shot. Danny did a fantastic job getting us to that point.
I always say if you're going to get an all-star starter, you need to get them early. You guys got a little action there in the first. That Mondesi caught stealing comes back to bite you.
Yeah, want him to keep the throttle down. That's the kind of team we're going to have to be. We're going to have to stay aggressive. That's the first thing I tell him. You know, it's a pretty good jump, great throw. He's going to have to keep hunting those bags for us, and that's the kind of player he is.
Hey, Mike, how impressive was it to see Tyler Zuber go two innings like that in his debut?
Yeah, he was really impressive. Watching the changeup come out of his hand, watching other teams react to it, not afraid to throw the breaking ball, and had good life on his fastball too. I mean, he stood out there like he's done it before, and you know that's a big day for anybody the first time they get that chance, and then to go out and have two innings like he did and run through some really tough hitters, impressive first day.
Mike, I know you've had exhibitions obviously and all that, but how close did this feel like a normal game, a normal opening day even?
Well, usually the opening day always has its own special flavor to it, no matter where you are. And for me, more than anything else, for the Zubers of the world or the Griffins or, some of the guys where this is their first time, you want them to be able to experience something like that. It's a great accomplishment, breaking with a team right out of camp, regardless of roster size. But to us, that felt like opening day. We knew we were competing for something. We're competing for a run at what we've been all talking about, dreaming of. And, the guys came out, they answered the bell, ready to go. And just unfortunately ended up on the wrong side of this one.
Everybody good?
They shifted around on Mondesi, and the left side's open. I know we talked about this in spring training, the ability for him or for anybody in this game, if they're going to put these extreme shifts on, to be able to bunt for a base hit. Is that something you think he is capable of? I'm not saying he's got to do it every time or he had to do it there, but is that something that if they're going to shift around on him like that, he's got to be able to do?
I want him to think of it every time. And I want him to take everything into consideration, the matchup situation in the game. Obviously, you're in a tight game. Anytime you can get those wheels on base, it makes a big difference. And he's going to continue to look for it. And times when he's even going good, they're probably going to shift him more, and it's going to open up free base hit when he's feeling right with it. That's one of those things that not very often, Soren, are we going to – we're going to force that on a guy. We're going to continue to talk to them and give them situations where we believe, hey, just don't forget about this weapon that you have. His speed is elite, and we'll keep trying to put pressure on defense to where at least they will have to take that away, open up more holes in the infield.
All right, guys.
All right, guys.
Thank you. All right, Witt's down here right now. He'll talk about his night and facing Bieber, and then we'll go get Doug. Come on.
Hey, Whit, just take us through what it was like to face Bieber tonight. It looked like he had everything working.
Yeah, he had good stuff. That curveball, if I'm not mistaken, is a new pitch for him. Last year, I think he was pretty predominantly fastball slider. So for him to mix in that curveball, and it's a good one. It's a good one. It's sharp, and he was commanding it well. So for him to mix that in now is just going to elevate his game.
And Witt, does that curveball make it hard to be aggressive up there? Because it seemed like he got some guys looking off balance with that breaking ball and then sort of, you know, could dictate the rest of the at-bats.
It's just, I mean, it's a new, like I said, it's a new pitch. We guys haven't seen it yet, and this was the first time seeing it, and we didn't do a great job of making an in-game adjustment. But for first game, some young guys, I think, with some jitters, and you know, it's can only go up from here.
Whit, what did the atmosphere feel like? Obviously, this is a first for everybody.
Yeah, it sucked. Honestly, it sucked. It was an opening day and the atmosphere sucked. But I still had jitters. I still had that adrenaline, which was exciting for me to be able to feel that adrenaline again. But, I mean, it's opening day. You want to have fans. You want to have crowd. You want it to be loud. And it wasn't. And it sucked, but it is what it is, and it's not going to change. So we gotta figure out how to adapt.
All right, so opening day jitters there in the interview room too. Sounds like maybe.
Something about yard sale back there. Just wanted to drop
something. I know there have been demonstrations throughout baseball and throughout the, I know MLS has had it before. Can you take us through anything that you can share with what the conversations were like in your clubhouse about what you guys wanted to do, what it meant to you?
We talked about it a lot, and you know, we're gonna stand with our colleagues and our teammates and the league on social injustices happening, racial injustices, and you know, we're gonna stand for that. And I know everybody was on board for that. So that's what you saw.
Everybody good? You said, yeah, I got one last one. You said the atmosphere sucked, right? Is there anything that can be done to improve that, or what do you guys have to do as players to sort of meet that in the middle and make it feel real?
Bring the fans back in. I mean, other than that, the crowd noise is not authentic. I would almost rather just have them play music. You know, they do that at NBA games. I would just kind of rather just have them play music. So until they bring fans back in, nothing's going to even come close to being the same, because it's having whatever, however many of the souls, 30,000 for an opening day would have been a lot of fun. And it was still fun, but it just wasn't the same.
Hey, Danny, I just wanted to jump right to that fifth inning. It seemed like you made the pitch you wanted to with Perez. Did you think that was potentially a double play ball when it left the bat? Or did you know where everybody was positioned?
You know, I look back pretty frequently to see where everybody is. And, you know, I did think it was it to where double play depth would be. But, man, like, there's so much advancements we've made and, you know, shifting people, and you never you never second guess what your coaches do, right? So, you know, I feel like that's going to work a lot more than it doesn't. And I would never second guess Vance Wilson, you know what I mean? So it is what it is. It's a sign of the times, and, you know, the numbers don't lie.
What did you think of your stuff overall? It seemed like you had really good command for this early.
Yeah. Felt like I haven't been that good in a long time. The strikeouts weren't showing it, but I was getting some pretty weak contact for the majority of the game. I think Jose Ramirez was really the only hard hit ball. And that was a mistake in the first inning, and we made adjustments to, you know, my changeup wasn't really there today. So, made adjustments to what we had, and the slider and the curveball were fantastic. So we strayed away from the changeup. I'll work on that leading up to my next start, and hopefully that'll be there too. And we'll have a full repertoire.
Thanks, Danny.
Yep.
Danny, how much of an advantage was it working with Salvi back there tonight for you?
Yeah, it felt like home, man. It felt like home. You know, all the other guys who I've been throwing to over the last year and a half, year and a half, are great. You know, I love Cam Gallagher. I love Valoria. You know, the way those dudes call the game, Nick Deeney. I mean, you know, I can name a lot of dudes who got behind the plate for us, and they're all extremely prepared. So, but having Salvi back there felt like home.
And then did you feel like, I mean, at that kind of breaking point in the fifth, you feel like you could go more? I know you no second guessing for you, but what'd you feel like in that situation?
I always want the ball. I'm just going to, you know, just going to leave it at that.
Danny, what was on that subject? What was kind of the plan coming in on how far you could go? Was it a pitch number? Was it a number of batters? What were you kind of armed with from the coaching staff as to what the plan was?
You know what, man? I got up to 90 pitches in the last sim game, including the two innings that I threw in the bullpen. And, you know, people who know me know that I go all out, whether it's in the game or in the pen. If you got to, you know, build up your pitches and whatnot. I got to 90, felt like I was, you know, right on track where I needed to be. But at the end of the day, that's not my call.
Everybody
good?
Yeah. Go ahead, Sam. Danny, I hear what you just said, right, about you go all out no matter what. But when you're out there on the mound tonight here, like in that atmosphere, did it feel like a normal game? Did you have to play mind games with yourself to get you up for an opening game? How did it feel out there?
I felt like every other game I've ever played, just a little less noisy. I don't need any, you know, fabricated adrenaline. When I get the ball, you know, I feel like I'm pretty primal. So I don't need any extra. but, you know, we miss the fans, man. I don't want to, like, discount that. But I had no problem getting locked in.
Danny, there have been demonstrations all throughout baseball, right, with the opener, with the Black Lives Matter movement. Can you just give any thoughts on what was said amongst your team and what the feelings and emotions were during that?
Yeah, I mean, it's something that I think needs to be recognized, man. You know, I, as a dude who, you know, I'm a Caucasian guy. You know, I feel like it needs to be known that a lot of people probably don't, probably definitely don't have the same opportunities that we have. I think that's an important message to get out. However you want to get that message out, you know, you got to do it. I think that's something that's pretty important right now. And, you know, I'm glad we're doing it.